The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. For the last few weeks that I've been here, I've been talking about various qualities that support the meditation. They're the qualities that kind of come together that allow us to basically cultivate the skill of meditation. And there's five qualities that are in this category, one of the lists that the Buddha talks about, called the five faculties. And these five qualities are confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And these qualities can be looked at as in particular to qualities that support our meditation, but they're also more generally qualities that support any skill that we want to develop. The wisdom aspect of these five faculties could be the wisdom or the knowledge or the understanding needed to learn to play the piano, for instance. Or it can be the knowledge, the wisdom that will support our a movement to meditation. Then the confidence of, can I do this? You know, the confidence of actually having the ability to engage allows us to then make the effort, the energy, to apply the tools, the techniques for whatever skill we're trying to develop. Which leads us to the mindfulness piece, which in meditation is the mindfulness directed towards our arising experience and being aware of what's happening in the moment. And this quality, of course, too, just as with meditation, as playing the piano, you need to be mindful of the notes, the pressure of the fingers on the keys, what you're reading, the sheet music. So all of that you need to be mindful and aware of. And the way that the energy and mindfulness work together will create a sense of concentration, will create the ability then to more easily engage with the activity without so much effort. That's kind of the culmination, in a way, of the concentration, that there's not so much intentional efforting towards the activity. It becomes more part of our skill. This is when the skill really begins to develop, when the concentration comes together. And in our meditation, when the concentration comes together, it becomes more effortless also. We don't need to try so hard to meditate. It's much more fluid and flowing. And these pieces of energy, mindfulness, and concentration together with the meditation allow our minds to then begin to more clearly recognize the wisdom, the understanding that we were previously taking as book learning or understanding that of things that people had said to us. And we begin to understand them more directly. And then the cycle begins again, kind of in a way that this is just a kind of a spiraling, deepening path through these qualities, that the more we understand, the more then confident we are and the more energy we bring to the practice, the more mindful we are, the more concentration develops, the more we understand, etc. So I've been talking about these qualities, and so far I've talked about confidence, energy, and mindfulness. And today I'd like to focus on concentration a little bit and maybe for the next couple of weeks talk a little bit about this concentration. Now, concentration as one of these qualities, this is a kind of a shift in these qualities. Previously, confidence, energy, and mindfulness, these are qualities that you can actively engage with. You can bring energy into your meditation. You can find ways to connect with confidence consciously in your meditation. You can consciously connect with mindfulness. We can have a little bit of control in a way over connecting with these first three qualities. At this point, coming to concentration and the fruit of the concentration being the deeper understanding of the wisdom, those cannot be consciously done. All that we can do is engage with energy and mindfulness to connect with our experience over and over and over again. And with a particular container, a particular sense of relaxed connection to experience, concentration will arise. So concentration isn't actually something we do. It's not something we can consciously say, okay, I'm going to be concentrated now. The way I can kind of say, okay, I'm going to use my energy to pay attention to this thing right now. We have a little bit of control in that area that we can intentionally direct our minds towards paying attention. With respect to concentration, we can't do that. We can't say, I'm going to be concentrated right now. So this is a slight shift in this list, in that it is now the result of our engagement as opposed to something that we do. But it is a crucial piece of the practice, this cultivation of concentration, getting familiar with it, understanding the conditions that support its arising, will greatly help us to allow this concentration to appear. And the benefits of concentration, the benefits of that settling, I'll talk about a little bit more later, but basically it is what allows us to then begin to be able to see more clearly, to move towards this deeper understanding of meeting things as they are without reactivity. The kind of the well-being that arises as we can actually meet our experience without either wanting to get rid of it or wanting to hold on to it, but just balanced with the flow of experience, the flow of changing experience. That's concentration that allows that to happen. So energy and concentration together, the two preceding factors of this list, are what support the arising of concentration. And I'd like to talk for a few minutes about different ways that we can bring energy and mindfulness together to support the cultivation of concentration. And I'm going to talk about this because there's so many different ways, there's so many different paths, there's so many different techniques out there, meditation techniques. They are a wide range of tools and techniques for cultivating energy mindfulness, which results in a form of concentration. And so I'm going to kind of map out that terrain by talking about the two ends, or two of the kind of opposite sides of the spectrum of how concentration is developed. So the first, the kind of one that we're most familiar with when we think about concentration, if you think about what you actually mean or understand by concentration, that word itself tends to bring into our minds this idea of a narrow focus. It tends to, the term itself tends to make us think about a narrowing. Or, you know, say, I'm really concentrated on this one thing. That's how we think about that term. And that's one end of the spectrum, a kind of a one-pointed focus of attention. We choose something in our experience to pay attention to, such as the breath, and we just keep coming back to that one thing over and over and over again, letting go of anything not that experience. So in meditation with the breath, we bring our attention towards the breath and let go of sounds, let go of thoughts, let go of emotions, let go of other body sensations, and just keep coming back to the breath. This supports a very kind of rapid settling, or it can support a rapid settling of the mind, because you are just abandoning, letting go of anything not that one experience. So it brings the mind into a kind of a very stable place. Stillness is the hallmark of this kind of concentration. Stillness of mind and stillness of experience. It moves more and more steadily towards a very tranquil, peaceful kind of experience in which very pleasant bodily sensations start to arise, rapture, bliss, happiness, very sweet kinds of sensations begin to arise in this practice of just coming back to the breath over and over and over again. So that's kind of one side of the spectrum with respect to practice. We, in our meditation, we pick something that we choose as our point. The breath, or perhaps we choose a mantra or an image that we construct in our mind. There's many different ways, many different tools and teachings about how to cultivate that one-pointed awareness. The way we typically work here is with the breath. Then there's, on the other side of the spectrum, is what we can call kind of moment-to-moment concentration. This kind of concentration is cultivated by, not by bringing attention to one thing over and over again, but by maintaining a continuity of awareness within a changing field of experience. So the mindfulness continues to connect with a sight, a sound, a body sensation, a breath, an emotion, a thought, another body sensation, the breath again. There's just this flow, this river of experience, and the awareness stays continuous even as the experience continues to change. So this is more of a stabilizing of the mind. The mind becomes very stable and still, and it doesn't follow out after things that we like, things that we don't like. It's just this flow of experience, and the mind is non-reactive. That stillness of the mind is non-reactivity. It hears the sound of the car, and it doesn't start thinking about, well, wouldn't it be great to not be sitting in here right now, but instead be able to just drive away. I'm sick of this lecture right now. So just instead of that, it just hears the sound. And then there's another thing. There's a pressure on the butt, and then there's a feeling in the abdomen, and then there's a sense of moisture in the mouth, just a flow of changing experience. Without reacting, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, whatever comes up, the mind just meets it. The concentration in this kind of meditation develops through the continuity of awareness. It's actually harder, in the other practice, the practice of coming back to a single object, the breath over and over again, the concentration also develops through the continuity of awareness. It's just generally easier to realize when you've lost track of a single object than it is to realize that the mind has wandered off into reactivity to this flow of changing experience. So in general, it tends to be easier at the beginning to cultivate a stability of mind, to cultivate the stability of continuity of awareness on a single object. It tends to be easier. For many people, it tends to be easier. For some people, it's not, actually. For some people, it is easier to just connect, to just let go and relax and connect with the flow of experience. I find both ways. Some people are easier. It's easier for them to connect with the flow, and for some people, it's easier to just stay with the breath. So both kinds of concentration, the continuity of the awareness on changing experience and the continuity of the awareness on a single experience, they both support this cultivation of non-reactivity, of the fact that when you're with the breath, you're with the breath and then a sound arises, you're not reactive to that sound because you're just coming back to the breath. With the flow of changing experience, the continuity of the awareness, your continuity is meeting the next thing, whatever the next thing is. So there's not much room for reactivity, because after the sound there's a body sensation, and then there's a pressure, and then there's a tension, and then there's a thought, and then there's something else and something else and something else. So there's just not much room for reactivity as the mind gets more continuous, as the mindfulness gets more continuous. So we can't really talk about concentration as separated from mindfulness and energy, because it is the energy directing the mindfulness either towards a single object or towards this flow of changing experience that results in the concentration, which is this continuity of the mindfulness over time. So it's the energy to apply the mindfulness over time that results in the concentration. I'm going to stop there for a minute and just see if there's any questions. I've got a lot more I can say, but I just want to check in and see if there's any thoughts or... Yeah, Bud.
So the moment-to-moment is easier to take off the
cushion. So yes, the moment-to-moment, his comment, because we didn't have the microphone, the moment-to-moment awareness is easier to take off the cushion. Yes, that is absolutely true. Although, I'll talk about that for a second, and then I'll talk about some of the range in between, because it's not really one or the other. That's not all there is. There's a wide range where they kind of flow between each other. So the moment-to-moment awareness is essentially if we can get familiar with that in our sitting practice, how to be aware of the flow of changing experience in our sitting practice, it's much easier then to take that kind of mindfulness and begin to meet the world as we navigate it. As we drive, as we go into the grocery store, we can meet the flow of changing experience. One of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, says, only six things ever happen. There's seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things coming up in the mind. And when we're sitting in meditation, there's seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things coming up in the mind. And that mindful, that continuity of awareness is just taking in the symphony of those six instruments, how they're playing in this moment. And that practice in our sitting meditation of learning how to be with that symphony can translate into being in the symphony of walking through the Safeway. They're seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things arising in the mind. Oh, I want that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I don't like the fact that she jumped in front of me in the line. All of that is just seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, things arising in the mind. So that cultivation of that kind of mindfulness makes it much easier to then be more mindful in our daily lives, which is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, that is where a lot of our reactivity comes. I mean, we can sit silently in meditation and have a bit of relief from our reactivity, from our stress, from our pain, from our struggles. And then as soon as we walk out the door, boom, it's right back. You know, so the more that we can cultivate that ability to just meet whatever is happening, and begin to see where the reactivity leaps off of our experience. That's really a big part of this learning. It's learning to see where the mind begins to leap out of something we like, to want it, to get it, to have it, to something we don't like, to want to get rid of it, to push it away. The more we can start to see that reactivity as the actual, that whole pattern that unfolds as being the kind of place that our suffering arises from, the more we see, oh, don't need to go there. And we can just stay with that unpleasant thing or that pleasant thing instead of following out after it to try to manipulate the world. We can just meet the world. Now, I'm not saying, it sounds like I'm saying, but I'm not saying that we're not supposed to change anything. It often, I think, is misunderstood, the teaching, because we talk so much about non-reactivity, about not being reactive to unpleasant, and not being reactive to pleasant, to want it, to get it, not being reactive to unpleasant, to want to push it away, to get rid of it. I'm not saying that we're not supposed to do anything. It's not simply about just being lumps on a log, sitting here going, oh yes, things as they happen, and not responding. But the key here in understanding our minds is understanding that the suffering comes from the reactivity. The suffering comes when we react to something out of greed, of wanting to have it, of needing to have it, of feeling like our happiness depends on having it. The suffering comes from the wanting to get rid of, the aversion, the feeling like our happiness depends on getting rid of it. It's that greed, that aversion, the delusion that is the source of that suffering. And if we can, instead of reacting to things, respond out of compassion, respond out of kindness, respond out of friendliness, of balance of mind, that's the kind of movement in terms of meeting the world that the concentration begins to support. As we begin to see where our reactivity is, we learn we have a choice. Do we need to be reactive? Are there things we can let go of? So much, actually, of the things that we react to, we can let go of. And it's not really necessary to have everything that we think we want. It's actually not necessary to get rid of and manipulate our environment to fix other people, to fix the way they think, to fix the way they act. But it can be necessary at times to take action. If you see a child running out into the street in front of a car, you're not going to just sit there and say, things as they are. You know, you take action. You go, and out of compassion and care for that child, you pull the child back off the road. So it's not the possibility of acting comes from compassion and kindness instead of from greed and aversion. So I just wanted to say that, because often it does sound like we're saying, oh, don't do anything. I'm suggesting that the tools of mindfulness and energy leading to concentration will allow you to begin to distinguish when an action comes out of this automatic kind of, oh, don't like that, or oh, want that, to when an action can come out of more of a compassionate and kind place, a balanced place of mind that isn't so reactive but is responsive. The mind that settles, the mind that becomes free of reactivity, is more naturally responsive. So we don't need to fear that this practice will turn us into some kind of zombie. It actually opens our heart to more deeply connect with the world. So that was a bit of a wander. Now I'm going to come back to Bud's question about it's easier to take the moment-to-moment concentration off the cushion. And I'm going to talk for just a moment about kind of the mid-range, the middle range of different kinds of practices. I'll just maybe pick one kind of right in the middle. And that is a kind of a practice of awareness of the breath. And I kind of guided you in this direction a little bit. where you can be aware of the breath, and yet also it's not excluding other experience. There's a way in which certain kinds of concentration practices, you're so focused on the breath that it begins to exclude every other experience. All you become aware of is just the breath. There's no sound, there's no other body sensation, there's just the breath. There's no emotional experience, it's just the sensation. It's just that experience. It's just, and then around that comes kind of some very beautiful mental experiences. So the one-pointed concentration is very exclusive in a way. The side I was talking about, initially when I talked about the two sides, that one-pointed concentration is kind of exclusive. You just let go of everything, not the breath, and over time, the mind just kind of zeroes into that experience and gets absorbed into it. And then everything else falls away. There's a more intermediate place that's kind of between the two, and that's where you're paying attention to the breath, and it more is the breath suffusing experience. So the breath, it's like the breath goes through body sensations, the breath goes through sound, through emotions. So it's a kind of a more encompassing experience. It allows you to kind of stay stabilized on one experience, but also not excluding other things. And so that that kind of awareness that kind of practice is more, it's kind of a hybrid in a way. You're in the middle. You're staying connected with one experience, but also open. The mind is very wide to experience. That you can also take off the cushion. I think it feels like there's a little bit kind of a bubble around you in that kind of a meditation or that kind of an awareness. The bubble of the breath, the kind of like this protective bubble or something. With the moment-to-moment concentration, it's not like there's a bubble at all. You're just meeting, everything is just right there. Does that answer your question, Bud? Is that?
Absolutely.
Do you want to use the mic? I'll pass the mic back.
So I see that, what you just recommended, as breathing into a reactivity or a possible reactivity. For example, if you have a scenario in which anger is produced, you can breathe into the anger to diffuse it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I see it as the most helpful.
Yes.
Breathing into a particular experience.
And you can also, I mean, the skillful means are really important. I mean, that's not the only way to use it. That you found that for yourself is great. Use it. There's also the possibility of, just staying with the breath, and then it's kind of like, it can be kind of like that breath becomes the kind of extension of an antenna, and you notice, oh, the breath is shifting or changing a little bit. Oh, there's something to pay attention to here. So that, you know, so that's possible to use the breath as a kind of more continuously in daily life, as opposed to just when there's some reactivity. But I also find it very helpful, the using the breath the way you describe.
It's been described as the point around which a circle is drawn, right?
Another way to look at it, this is the way Tan Jeff talks about it, is that the breath is kind of like a candle in the middle of a room. And you can either turn your attention to that candle and just look at the candle, or you can notice that it lights up the whole space. And the lighting up the whole space is kind of more the notion of it being, it infusing all the experience. It's the continuity of the mindfulness joined with a kind of a light touch on that experience of breathing. And a much more broad experience, too. At least in my experience, it's a much broader, it's not a narrowed experience of breathing. It's not like the breathing down here at the nose that we're talking about. It's a sense of the breath suffusing the whole body. And it's kind of just more of an energetic, the energy body, or the feeling of the energy through the body, that staying with that is a form of breath energy, as Tan Jeff says.
It amplifies the experience.
It can make it clear. It can make it more clear.
But sort of to get back to the anger, to concretize your metaphor and get back to the anger, though, you can breathe into the anger, but then there's also the possibility of, you know, if anger is an issue, then it's an opportunity to, I keep thinking of, you know, inviting the anger in for tea.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, the Buddha and Mara's daggers and turning them into flowers.
But, yes.
But, and, you know, you might not be able to do that immediately, but it's, oh, isn't this interesting? I mean, without, and you're not going to take the anger out on the person that's stepped in front of you. You're going to use it as a grist for your own mill. Mm-hmm. And, be curious and interested in the anger, and that to be that's the candlelight filling the room. And I guess we're not supposed to think in hierarchies, but I think, you know, that there's something more enlightening there.
So yes, I mean, this is these range of practices. What you're describing is on the side of the more meeting experience as it arises. The continuity of, oh, isn't this interesting? Anger has arisen in the mind. Oh, wow, what's going on? You know, the body feels like this. The mind is thinking these kinds of thoughts. That is the kind of cultivating the concentration on the moment-to-moment experience. And that is also very skillful if you can do it. If you can bring that interest so that you're not reacting in that anger, but are just, oh, here's the anger. Here's what anger feels like. Can I meet this experience instead of lashing out at the person in front of me? That's great. And at times we find that we need to also use some skillful means from this repertoire of techniques. And sometimes it can help us to stay connected to that anger. Interest can be a tool to help us stay connected with that anger. The breath can be a tool to help us stay connected.
And that interest can take you to a psychological insight.
About, yes.
Oh, she reminds me of, you know, this person I had a lot of difficulty with in, you know, 30 years ago.
Yes.
Or whatever. And I guess you have to be careful not to get too analytic, too bogged down in it, but just a flash of insight can be really helpful.
Absolutely, but, absolutely.
And a car, just a little aside, I'm reminded, I came to the Rick Hansen talk, and he's a neuroscientist, and he talked about how, Steve, you were there too, something about the acknowledgement of a negative emotion or the labeling of it or results in a decrease in the activity in the amygdala, something. Yeah, that the amygdala, there's the activity in the amygdala quiets down. And so, I mean, that's kind of like the proof is in the pudding.
The proof is in the experience. We are a culture of needing the scientific evidence to say, oh yes, oh, it actually does something to the amygdala, but meditators have known for years that using that labeling is really helpful. Yeah.
Thank you. So So I was looking at the sunflowers in the vase and seeing concentric circles, which I assume the root of the two words, concentration and concentric, are, and circle, are all the same. I don't know that. I'm not a linguist by any means. Mm-hmm. But what I liked about noticing the sunflowers and in its concentric circles is that whether you're focused on one thing or focus or going from moment to moment, it radiates out.
Yes, yes. That's a nice analogy, actually, that sense of the, they're all kind of, and it's like you can be at the center looking at one thing or stepping out those concentric circles. Just since you mentioned the term concentration, I'm going to offer some different translations of that term. The term is samadhi, it's usually translated as concentration. The term itself, samadhi, has two parts to it. It's the sam part, which basically means with, and the adi part, which means to something like stand or to pose or something like that. So to stand with, to join with. So it's sense of connection. And then a word that is kind of similar in English is compose. Compose, which actually has similar, come means with, pose, stand. So compose. And that's kind of a different sense than concentrate, isn't it? I mean, we have a different sense of compose. Compose has a sense of quietude, of stability, of kind of a sense of the mind being present and balanced. And that's kind of the concentration, that's kind of the sense of the moment-to-moment concentration in particular, that there's a kind of a unification of mind that happens. It's not unification on one thing, but it's a unification of awareness, that the awareness is able to meet whatever is coming up. See, so there's compose, and some other terms that are different, but kind of in the territory, tranquility, although the tranquility is kind of more of a side effect of concentration in a way. There's, you know, I mentioned some of the things that happen as the mind gets settled, the tranquility, peacefulness, calm, those are kind of hallmarks of concentration. And they tend to, the tranquility in particular, tends to be much more obvious in the one-pointed concentration where we're focusing on a single object. Because then, in that kind of experience, not only does the mind get still, but the object gets still. The thing we're paying attention to gets still. And so everything kind of settles down. There, the tranquility can be very, very clear. And some of the other side effects of concentration, the joy that comes, the sense of happiness and bliss, they're just some beautiful states of mind that come with concentration. They can be quite clear. With the moment-to-moment concentration, the same things happen, but it feels different. The tranquility is in the mind, and yet there's a lot going on. I mean, the mind is connecting to the rapidity, the flow of changing experience, of that symphony of the six senses, just the seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, things going on in the mind. That there's, so it's not tranquil in the world of objects. It's tranquil in the mind, in that the mind is not reactive to that world. Balance of mind, peace comes. It's not a balance that's a result of things out there getting very still. It's the balance of mind of non-reactivity. Any other thoughts, any other questions before I go on? okay. So to kind of just complete the circle of these faculties, one of the other benefits of concentration, whether the one-pointed kind or the moment-to-moment kind, is that whether you've developed your concentration through the one-pointed kind of practice or through the moment-to-moment kind of practice, the concentration that has been developed can then be turned towards understanding. It can be turned towards looking at experience. The seeing, just as you were describing, seeing kind of how the mind is responding, the insights that come from watching how the mind reacts to things and seeing, oh, this is happening because of causes and conditions. This person looks like my ex-boyfriend, and therefore, you know, because of that connection in the mind, there's a reactivity to this person. So it begins to educate us in terms of how this reactivity happens. And as we begin to see that, the mind starts to let go of that reactivity. So it's the concentration really begins to open the door to more deeply understanding how this reactivity begins and supports the letting go. Because of that understanding, the letting go starts to happen. So this comes back to that wisdom aspect of the five faculties, that we begin our practice through just hearing, for instance, a teaching like, well, it's helpful to pay attention to anger instead of react to it. Just see if you can be present with it, breathe with it instead of reacting to it, and see what happens. It's that simple instruction is a little bit of wisdom. And we take that and apply it, and then we may at some point have an experience where, wow, I see how that works. And then the mind starts to let go of reactivity because it's seeing, oh, in this interchange, I'm kind of reaching out to something, and boy, I know where that's going. That's heading to suffering. So the mind begins to let go. So this continuity of mindfulness is very powerful. It's kind of like if you have a knife that is mindfulness, you know, the mindfulness is kind of cuts, discriminates, discerns experience. Concentration is the sharpening of that knife. It makes it cut clearly and cleanly, and it's very discerning. It brings the discernment. Those two pieces together, mindfulness and concentration, bring the discernment into our meditation, into our practice. And I can talk about that a lot more, but I'm going to leave that for now. Because what I'd like to just talk about a little bit briefly is the practice of concentration and some of the supports for concentration. When we think about how to concentrate, we typically, at least in my experience and in the experience of watching other people try to do this, over and over again I see people trying to willfully stay with experience in order to get concentrated. There's a kind of almost a desperate, oh, I've got to stay with the breath, I've got to stay with the breath, or I've got to stay with experience, that there's this kind of grasping to hold on to the breath or hold on to something in order to get concentrated. That can work and does work, but it's pretty brittle. The concentration that develops from that kind of willful application of attention it's not very stable. It doesn't last very long. It tends to be highly conditioned. It falls apart pretty easily. It's really narrow. It's very narrow. And what I've learned in my own practice is that the way I guided you in the guided meditation, beginning with relaxation is one of the best supports for concentration. It is really helpful to not be pushing the mind into something to try to stay connected with it in order to get concentrated. I've started thinking about it as setting up the container of our meditation through learning how to bring attention to experience in a relaxed way. That is really the key. If you can learn how to find a way, and it's different for everybody, we all have to kind of navigate our way through this terrain of the meditation techniques to find what is it that will support this mind and this body to be relaxed and yet attentive. So starting with relaxation is a good beginning. I found that just if I start with relaxation, I get a sense of what it feels like for the mind and body to be relaxed. And then beginning to see, can I direct the attention to something? Can I turn the attention to the experience of breathing? When I do that, very often, initially, my mind has a very strong habit of kind of, I've got practiced it for a while, of holding on to the breath to pay attention. As soon as I see that tension arise around trying, I go back to relaxation. I do that over and over and over again. Back to relaxation, try to connect with the breath. If I see it get tight, I back off. Over and over again. At some point in that process, the attention starts to figure out how to stay connected with the breath without that tightening. So it's really, I really encourage relaxation for a long time. You know, use relaxation to support the settling down of the mind and body. The practice of relaxation itself, of noticing the tension, relaxing it, is a mindfulness practice. You're kind of beginning with the mindfulness practice to feel the tension in the body. Can you release it? Can you relax it? We can get a little agenda-driven around relaxation, too. Oh, gotta relax, gotta relax. That will add yet more tension. So, again, it's finding ways for you that are skillful for relaxation. It may be consciously relaxing the body. It may be taking some deep breaths. It may be just letting yourself sit there and connect with hearing. Finding a way for you that supports a relaxed attention. For me, the main practice is just around opening to kind of changing experience. That is a very relaxing way to be for me. So I can sit in the midst of all kinds of things changing. It's much harder for this mind to direct attention to something and choose to pay, okay, now I'm going to pay attention to hearing. Now I'm going to pay attention to that pain in my knee. Now I'm going to pay attention to the breath. When I start adding a little bit of willful intentionality towards directing the attention, the mind gets tight. It's important in our practice to be able to have ease and relaxation of attention on both sides. Some people find it much easier for the mind to be relaxed when they're just connecting to one thing. It's like, oh, phew, I can ignore everything else. I can just be relaxed and stay with the breath. And when they try to open up to everything, to the changing flow of experience, the mind gets really confused and reactive. So they need to move back to the breath to relax. For me, I need to start open and then learn how to bring that relaxed attention to the directing of the attention. So for you, it's finding our own navigating our own path to recognizing and understanding what does it mean for you to be relaxed and attentive. That is kind of the container for our meditation. If you can find a way to be relaxed and attentive, the meditation will unfold on its own and you don't have to do much of anything. So that I really encourage that exploration for each of you. And I'll actually talk more about that next week a little bit, I think. Different ways in and different ways to use energy, different ways to use effort, as ways to learn how to connect. It really, you know, needs to be pretty light, the effort. Just, you know, a split second of effort. And then again, and then again, and then again. So that it's not heavy and grasping. It's much more, oh, can I be aware of this? Oh, and this, and this, and that. So that it's actually pretty light, the kind of effort that we make to stay continuous. Again, it's the effort and the mindfulness coming together. So those two pieces of how do we bring the effort to the mindfulness that will result in the concentration. So any other questions before we finish? We only have a couple more minutes. Well, let's sit for 2 minutes then. And in this 2 minutes, just see if you can allow yourself to relax. That's really all we have time for. So connect with relaxation. And I'm going to offer you one other thing that I find helpful. We can consciously try to relax the body, which is the way we did in the guided meditation. And we can also request the body and mind to relax and see how they respond. So in this moment, may the body relax. Not trying to do the relaxation, but dropping that request into the mind and body and see how does it respond. May the body relax. May the body relax. Thank you for your attention.